Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, we need to bring in the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, not much. Just ready to rock 2017. So I've declared it. I'm taking a page from the George Costanza playbook, and it's going to be the year of Angie. So that this year is going to be a good one. 2016 was really good with the birth of my son and everything like that. I can't complain, but you can always improve. So I'm ready to make 2017 my bitch.
So your bitch. So this is not going to be the summer of George. It's going to be the year of Angie, right?
It's going to be the year of Angie. That's just it. I have declared it as such. So let it be done.
Well, I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't end up like the summer of George in the hospital, atrophying and
right? It probably will. Knowing my, I don't know. That's what I said. I was talking to someone yesterday about the elevator business, and that's for those that don't understand. You know what the vice president of grain for Citizens Elevator does is I physically turn the bushels, or my staff, we turn bushels of grain produced by farmers, into cash. So we take it in, we store it, we do all kinds of different things. And I was talking to a gentleman yesterday about the 6 years that I've been in this position, because it'll be 6 years that I've been here next month. And all of the things from a fire in our major food grade non-GMO soybean processing plant to the drought of 12 to the inversion or backwardation for those outside of the grain side of things, the inversions that we dealt with. And all, it's just the last 6 years, it seems like every lesson I could learn that I feel like I have, but every time I say that, I end up finding a new one to discover. So I guess we'll see what 17 brings.
That would be something that would be very characteristic with the trading world in general. And then, of course, in the agricultural space, which is a little bit more challenging than others. So it's something that's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate lesson that we all have to learn. And so since this is the year of Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, give us the forecast for the year. What's going to happen this year?
Well, I anticipate, as we move ahead here, we're starting to see it a little bit. We've seen some strength start to come back in wheat and corn, which I've been thinking we'd see for a while now. Our big hurdle, of course, will be next week, January 12th. We get the quarterly stocks numbers from the USDA. That'll give us insight into what we had on hand December 1st. And that'll tell us really what it'll tell us in theory, I guess, what the USDA thinks we had for yield. Because if we have larger than anticipated stocks come December 1st, or, as reported, as of December 1st, that means that we had either larger production or more supply available than what we thought we did, or less demand, or vice versa. If we have smaller than expected stocks, then we had larger demand or less produced than what we thought. So next week's report's kind of big. I think it'll give us some insight. At the same time, though, if it is negative, and I hate to feel like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but if it is negative,
you are being George Costanza, so that would make sense.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and if it is negative to trade, I think it'll be a small hurdle, just in the sense that the margin of error is so huge. I mean, we just produced a 14 plus billion bushel or whatever corn crop and 4 billion plus bushels of soybeans. So it's not as though the numbers that the USDA gives us next week will necessarily be super focused on, I believe, if they're negative. If they're positive, if they come in a lot lower than anticipated, then I think that could get jumped on. I think that could be something that we could push, or they could come in somewhat neutral, and then at that point in time, we're just going to start focusing on how South American weather wraps up. I mean, we went from too dry in Argentina to now there's talks of flooding in certain areas, and some are saying that perhaps up to 5% of the soybean acres down that way won't get planted. Overall, does it really impact majorly from a global supply and demand situation? I'm not so sure. I mean, 2 to 3 million metric ton with the amount of beans that we have isn't a life changer by any means at this point. But I think we start talking about acreage. Soybean acres look like they'll be a lot higher this spring, and corn acres look like they could be lower. So I think corn and wheat will have more of a bullish story about them, and soybeans will probably tread water for a while, and I think they'll stay range bound, trade higher and move lower and keep doing it over and over again.
Well, it's kind of the usual story, right? I mean, they're going to obviously run a little bit the soybeans. It's kind of the nature of the beast, right? Corn was a crappy year last year, other than if you didn't get out in the 3 week period or right before July 4th, it was a pretty crappy year. But soybeans did have a positive year for the year. So, I think that's all right. Now, again, I'm a big fan of wheat, actually, this year. I think wheat's going to have a monster year. That's my personal opinion. Any thought to
that? It's the year of wheat. Let's call it that. It's not the year of Angie. It's the year of wheat. And that wouldn't make me sad. That could go hand in hand with the year of Angie. Is a higher wheat board would be nice. I've got some farmers that could really use better than $3 wheat prices going on. That's for sure.
But no, I mean, I do think, I mean, I've said it. I mean, I think the, you know, forever, I mean, you know, obviously everything works until it doesn't, but forever wheat was always a dollar over corn. And for the last couple of years, wheat has been, you know, 40 or 50 cents over corn. And of course, I believe that the relationship is going to resume. And I'm actually fairly bullish on grains for the year coming forward. Am I nuts? Well, I'm nuts, but am I nuts?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at it, and I've been penciling out just supply and demand, it's always important to kind of get a feel, and that's what I'm working on, pulling that up right now, just so I speak with a little bit of knowledge in front of me. But if you look at the supply and demand outlines, just using even the USDA numbers, which aren't ridiculously wild from a swing standpoint. I think there are 86 some odd million acres of soybeans expected in this coming spring and around 90 million of corn. And if you take 90 million acres of corn and you go back to our trend line yield, which is around the 165, between 165 and 170, if we continue to see the demand that we're seeing, which, at this point in time, I think could stay at that point. You know, the biggest question will be what Brazilian second corn crop looks like. That could have some influence on the global market, but our exports have been strong and they don't really appear to be front loaded. If you keep demand steady going into next year and look at a 90 million acre planted and don't even really have a weather problem, we just have a benign growing season, you're still looking at carryout dropping 800 to 900 million bushel. What we forget is that we've built this epic amount of demand. And with the lower prices that we've seen, we've continued to see demand growth take place. A lot of folks want to say, if you're looking at your wheat corn spread there, a lot of folks want to say that we're feeding a lot of wheat or we have the ability to feed a lot of wheat. It's not necessarily true. Once the wheat's put away, it's really not working its way out into the feed rations unless there's a quality issue. And in that case, we need to get rid of it because it's not doing us any good hanging out, with low falling number or something of that nature. So, I think going forward, I think we factored in everything negative about the wheat crop. I think the Australian crop coming in is huge as what it has, and
hold that at the Australian crop. We're gonna step out here for a break. This is the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, vice president, Citizens Elevator. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. When you miss an episode, it's libertytalk.fm to make sure that you download the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. We are going to step by here for a break and come back to Angie and the baby right after the break. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're coming right back to you. Welcome back to the Bubba Show with Todd Bubba Horowitz and Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, as well as at Goddess of Grains on Twitter with her son. He's cheering in today because he's going through a little teething. All right, so you were talking about the Australian stuff, so go ahead and finish up that thought, please.
Oh, yeah. It came in epically huge. Everyone's been talking about it, you know, most December, how big the Australian crop is. We know. You know what I mean? It's kind of, I think that's the last bearish toll in the market structure. And now we start to move on and really start to discuss what's going on in the Northern Hemisphere, which is less than ideal situations in North America and parts of Russia. We're starting to see some discussion over what's going on in the former Soviet Union area and parts of Europe. So, you know, overall, I think when it comes down to it, if you remember back, and I'm not saying we'll see another 07, 08, sort of go from $3 to $12 trade in Chicago wheat. But I think we'll see some support come back in and wouldn't be surprised to see a 5 spot on the front month here before harvest comes again for my guys come July. So we're just waiting for it and ready to take advantage if the market gives it to us, that's for sure.
Well, I'm trying to get a lot of bake sales going so we can have to make a lot of bread so we can make a much bigger demand for wheat. So we're having bake sales all over the country because I own a lot of wheat myself. And I'm only a speculator. I do think that we're going to go higher. So now let's talk about the USDA report and stuff. I say BS. Here's my theory, and you tell me what you think. You're more involved in your direction. I mean, I'm a hedger for a lot of farmers and producers. I've actually now computerized the model, so now it does everything automatically and tells you, you know, when it moves X, this is what you need to do. But I go, look, in today's world, with the amount of information flowing back and forth, and every person in the world basically carrying their own computer in their back pocket, there is no real major surprises anymore. I mean, I don't think there's going to be something that's going to be out there. I think more than likely the report is out there, you know, just like when we had the report in corn, and I'm getting guys there telling me they're getting, you know, 80, 90 bushels an acre, and they're coming out with a report like, what was it, 172 or whatever it was? I mean, I say BS on USDA reports, but I know that you're a moral believer, so tell me why I'm wrong.
Oh, no, I mean, I agree with you 100% on the BS side, but the hardest part is that the trade, and you know this better than anyone, I mean, the trade is hungry for some sort of information. I mean, look at us fawning over Fed minutes. You know what I mean? Like, we already know they raised rates 0.25%. Ooh, wow. Let's have some poor intern, you know, pour over it with a fine tooth comb just in case we missed a comma where there should have been a period. You know what I mean? And that's with the USDA. The one thing that I can say is that when the government was shut down in 13 or 14, we missed that October report, and we just sat here. I mean, it was as though no one had any insider information when we really did. It's just we haven't picked a secondary private resource to help us discover. I mean, the fact of the matter is crop insurance, the FSA and the crop insurance arm of the federal government have a more accurate indication of what happened from a production standpoint than anyone else out there. But for some reason, we have the USDA, which doesn't even communicate with the FSA, which is another arm of the government, you know, where the farmers go in. Farmers go in and report their acres by the end of June to the FSA. You know, it's a 98% enrollment or reporting pattern. So you already have a knowledge, or we have a strong knowledge of what the overall acreage is. And then a significant portion of farmers have some sort of crop insurance. And therefore are reporting their yields. You have crop insurance agents all over the country right now that could tell you probably more accurately what their customer base yielded overall, you know, or we tap into insurance payouts, indemnities and things of that nature. And you can tell right there how we yielded, what kind of production we had. But instead, we're left dealing with a government group or a report from a government group that really isn't necessarily, you know, it's a group of guys standing in a room with a dartboard. So, you know, while I really say that there's a lot of better ways that we could come up with the information that we need for the market to trade on, you know, until we facilitate a way to kind of have that be our beacon or our driver, we're stuck having to go with what the USDA has to say. It's frustrating because I think it's antiquated and an outdated system. by all means. And you know, farmers are reporting back what their yields are and things like that. And I have guys that will laugh that they, you know, oh, well, I told the USDA this, and then they'll bitch that the USDA information is wrong. You know, it's like I said, it's an antiquated system. But at this point in time, it's kind of one of those things where it's the only one that we have to really, that the market will follow from a whole trade perspective.
Okay, so, you know, explain to, you know, we have a very mixed crowd here, and explain to, mm-hmm. to us about crop insurance, how it works and what it does.
Well, it's basically a safety net for farmers. There's several different tools that a farmer can pick. The enrollment period happens in March of every year. So throughout the month of February, the federal government who oversees crop insurance works to set an average price based on the closing price of December corn and November soybeans throughout the month of February. Then farmers at that point in time, at the end of February, know what their baseline prices are, is what they're called. So if, for instance, it'd be $3.85 corn and $9.95 beans, let's say that. And by March 15th of every year, they have to pick the percentage of coverage that they want and the type of policy. So a farmer has a yield history that he's built up over the years, and so it says farm average is 150 bushel corn and 40 bushel soybeans. That is taken and multiplied by the average price, and that he then can pick a percentage of guarantee, either revenue wise or yield based. And so he can pick that anywhere from 50%, which is just catastrophic coverage. You know, if locusts were to come and chew up his crop. You know, that's the cheapest policy, up to 85% of coverage. And nowadays you have buy-up programs and different things like that farmers can get a hold of. Basically, in theory, it's a government subsidized to a certain point, you know, because the farmer receives some cheaper, it's he doesn't pay 100% out of pocket. There's some subsidies that go along with it, but it's basically a government subsidized put. You know, it puts a floor in place for the farmer. And then as the growing season progresses, by the time he gets to the end of the year, he takes his yield, you know, and if it was 140 bushel and the price dropped to 350, wherever he is short on that revenue guarantee that he locked into place in March, so he gets an indemnity check. If his yield is 130, but the price at the harvest price that's determined in October happens to be $4, and his overall revenue, even with a lower yield, is higher than what the guarantee was, he does not get a revenue check. So come the end of the year, all the crop insurance agents know what farmers have produced. Their yield is locked in. They use combine yield monitor records, scale tickets, you know, something of that nature. And so the crop insurance agent by the end of the year knows what that farmer's produced, you know, basically down to the last bushel. And that's how it works. I have some guys now that are getting away from crop insurance and looking at just insuring themselves through the market by owning their own puts. You know, some are discovering with the cheap volatility that, you know, the cheap vol and things of that nature that they can basically buy coverage at this point in time, better coverage than what a revenue policy would be, you know, on the market. So there are some changes that are taking place, but from an overall standpoint, I'd say probably 95% of farmers out there that are larger than 500 acres are enrolled in some sort of crop insurance program. They have to be in order to receive any government, you know, the ARC payments or the PLC or anything like that came through the last farm bill.
Okay, so now, so when they you'll actually answer when we come back from the break. But so they buy insurance, or they can buy, or they can kind of hedge, which is what you do. At the end, I want to know when we come back from the break. At the end of the day, which is a better method from your standpoint? But this is the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and of course, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. When you miss an episode and you want to hear more of Angie, because who wouldn't want to hear more of Angie? You go to LibertyTalk.fm. And you download that show every day. And then, of course, on the weekends, we do the Sporting Edge, which is always a lot of fun. In the meantime, make sure you check out BubbaTrading.com as we are doing a webinar for farmers and producers on Saturday, going to show off our new software we're excited about. So we're going to step out here for a break and come back with more from Angie when she tells me more about insurance that I don't need when we get back from the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz, will be right back. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grain, at goddess of grains on Twitter, and also the vice president of Citizens Elevator out of Michigan. She lives in Ohio, but what the hell? How can I figure that? I have no idea. But all right, so we have insurance. What's better, insurance or trading through the open market?
Oh, to me, I honestly believe that there's always a free market solution to everything. So I think for a lot of guys, if they can understand the option strategies that they can put in place, they can find that they'll insure themselves at a better value than going through the government or the private side of things. And a lot of guys are leaning in that direction. So I've had a lot of guys that have had issues, production issues, quality issues, something of that nature. Something that you would think you would buy insurance for, only to discover that because of some other hitch in the policy, they do not receive an indemnity at all. So I have had some guys that have been a little frustrated, and we lean towards other options out there. You can buy a hail policy, which is pennies on the dollar, for coverage, and that covers hail, vandalism, overturn, catching on fire, something of that nature. And so those parts would be covered. The main thing is I think from a yield coverage perspective, where a farmer, runs into a drought situation or something like that, the outside insurance is a good way to go. From a price or a revenue coverage perspective, insuring through the market, I think, is far better for a grower than what the revenue protection is offered through crop insurance, in my opinion.
I'm not, and we value your opinion. That's why we ask.
I'm just waiting for the letters from insurance agents telling me all of the ways a farmer can cover his revenue, and they can't do the insurance anymore. I mean, there are companies out there that are basically in theory buying a guy a short dated put option on the November soybean futures in order to guarantee revenue between now and the revenue set time in February. Which is great, but a farmer, and the reason that it's popular is because it's much easier to just tell a guy, hey, you pay me this much money, and I'm going to go ahead and lock in this revenue guarantee for you. It's easy. It's not even out of the question. You start to explain to a farmer that he just purchased a short-dated put, and his mind is blown. You know what I mean? So there are some tools out there, but at the same time, you know how it is. You get more hands in the pot, and next thing you know, what the farmer is receiving is watered down, but the folks higher up on the tree there are making reasonably solid commissions out of something that a grower doesn't even know he's paying.
Well, listen, I know one thing for sure, that insurance companies don't give nothing away for nothing, so obviously you're paying... If you're paying a bigger premium and you don't have the opportunity for the big market, I don't believe if you're starting to pay the insurance and locking in a price. But again, I think there's always a quirk and a catch somewhere. But I believe kind of what you do or what I do and helping them gives them a much better opportunity, and usually for a lesser price over time and allows them to really participate when we do get, you know, one of those monster markets, which, you know, they don't announce themselves. And maybe they might tell you, Angie. Yep. They don't tell me, but they might send you a telegram and say, hey, we're going to have a big year this year, but because you've already told me it's your year. But
working on it.
Now, this year, what would you say are the banks going to be more liquid because of Trump and all that stuff? Is money going to be easier to come by? Because obviously we know that 99% of the farmers have to borrow a ton of cash to get started. And when will they start getting? And when will they get started?
I don't know. I think for farmers who haven't already tapped into the bulk of their equity, then yeah, the money will be easy to get. You know, there are certain growers out there that a bank would love to finance. You know, perhaps they've bankrolled themselves, or you know, have little in the way of debt load. For those that already have an extreme debt load, then no. I think banks will find that it's easier to give, you know, subprime car loans to people who shouldn't be buying a Lexus than they will to a farmer who, you know, has already tapped into the bulk of his land equity. You know, I think it's going to be very situational. For those that are good borrowers and have, like I said, limited debt load and things of that nature, well, hell yeah. I mean, I think the bank's going to love to give out money because they're getting more for what they're loaning out, and if the Fed is accurate, they'll continue to get a little bit more of what they're loaning out, and you know, perhaps we'll see that happen. I don't know if we'll see the opposite of what the Fed's trying to do. You know, of course, you raise interest rates to tighten your cash flow out there, or your money flow out there, but has the money that's been flowing really been that great? You know what I mean? Have we seen, and maybe it's a question I turn around on the host here, have we seen an outflow of money that we would want to see that requires the next step, which is a retightening of policy. You know, some would argue that we really haven't, no. That banks haven't really, you know, I don't think we've seen it. What you would anticipate to have happen. I think it's just been pooled in certain hands and that's where it's at, you know, to go around and tighten policy again and raise interest rates. I don't know if that's even, you know, you play in, you get messing around with markets, and I don't think anyone's considered the unintended consequences. But in any event, you know, it'll all depend on the farmer and his situation. You know, guys are already starting to look ahead. We had a lot of guys come in and look to prepay, you know, get money paid and put down to lock in prices on fertilizer and chemicals at the end of the year. Nowhere near the amount we had, you know, at the end of 2013 when prices had been good and chemical and fertilizer prices had risen in the spring, so guys wanted to get in early. Now a lot of guys are sitting back and waiting, but you had guys locking in seed purchases, you know, August through December of last year, and that'll really get ramped up, you know, as we move forward, and we'll see the growing season get started for some folks in Texas as early as, you know, late next month, and for the bulk of the Corn Belt and things like that, end of April, first part of May, and everyone will start turning wheels, you know, weather permitted.
All right, so right, that's so now, when does the typical farmer who's going to borrow money, when will he, like, they're putting together their marketing plans, right? And and when will they start, like, when will be their first trip, like, to go to the bank and say, hey, I need this for this year. What am I going to, when do they start that?
It typically starts December, mid-December through January, and the really Johnny-come-latelys tend to go in February. I'm already getting guys that, you know, how much did you pay me this past year? How much did I make? What do I have contracted? You know, what can I tell my banker? I have a lot of guys that will call up and ask, you know, what is your opinion on the market? What is our plan? And we'll lay out a plan, a marketing plan for the banker and stuff like that. So it's right now is about the busy time for bankers and farmers and accountants and everyone getting their stuff around for the year ahead.
Now, you know, we've got, you know, a lot of things going on. So if you could make a guess, and obviously I know you can't give me an exact guess, but what would you say would be the input cost of corn, let's say this year? What's your guess of what it's going to cost them to get it in and get it ready and get it out?
Yeah, I mean, I typically go by bushel because of the marketing side. So I would say most guys will tell you, you know, around $3.50 a bushel. You know, so you're looking at about $600 an acre, give or take, depending on where they're located. I'm talking in the Iowa, you know, out here where the dirt's good and things like that. I you're looking at $500-$600 probably on corn, you know, $300-$400 on soybeans, give or take, is a roundabout estimate per acre that guys are going out and spending.
Yeah, well, of course it's good in Iowa. That's where all the USDA reports come out of, because it's always good there. So.
Right, that's right. The last couple of years, I will admit, the weather has been pretty good for them. This past year, I think the heat zapped some of the corn yield potential, but the USDA and I have a disagreement on that one. But
So
yeah.
What's a better deal for a farmer? A crop that gets higher price but short, you know, for weather, for whatever reason, or a bumper crop that they get a lot less for? What's a better deal as a rule?
As a rule, a bumper crop that they market properly, you know, even if they get to the end of the year and they get a lot less for it, that's always better. To have more bushels than what you anticipate is always a good thing. Because typically with a short crop year, if lower production happens, the markets tend to rally after farmers marketed a lot. So he'll have lower price marketing done. You know, the market will move higher and he doesn't have extra bushels to sell come harvest time. So as a general rule, most farmers will tell you they would rather have a bumper yield, which is why you see so much money and time spent on agronomy versus paying attention to how to learn how to properly market or all of the tools that are available to you through the market. You know, guys will spend more time trying to chase the elusive, you know, 300 bushel per acre corn yield sort of deal, and the 100 bushel soybeans, and you know, spend all of their time focusing on all of that, because the higher the yield, the better the revenue, even with lower board prices.
All right, so now what we're going to do when we come back from the break, I'm going to prepare this. I want you to give us the Cliff Notes version of what you would consider a good solid marketing plan for a farmer and a producer and how that works. So I think it's important that the people understand, like I said, because we do have a mixed crew here, and I'd like everybody to understand how that works and what you're thinking about when we do that. So when we come back, you get a whole about 3 minutes to think about that. This is Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, also at Twitter, the goddess of grains, and of course knows her stuff, as you can tell, and loves to fire it in. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, but make sure that you go to libertytalk.fm and download so you can listen to Angie, our farming expert, and make sure that you get her stuff and check her out all the time on Twitter. Also go to bubbatrading.com. As you can see, we're doing a lot of new programs and getting ready. And, of course, this Saturday, we're introducing our new software. So we will see you back here after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, coming right back with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie, so I need help with my marketing plan. Give me the Cliff Notes version of what to do.
Well, the first thing that we do is figure out the cost, what you're talking about, the cost per acre, the breakdown of cost per bushel that it is or that a farmer is going to be spending. Because that's, I mean, you got to get to break even before you can even start to worry about making profit, you know. So that's the number one thing that we do. And once you figure that out, we get a feel or build a sliding scale on, okay, if your yield is 10 or 20% below expected, you know, this is where your cost would be. If they're 10 to 20% higher, this is where your cost would be. But this is the median cost that you're looking at. Second thing that I talk to farmers about is what their space constraints are at harvest time. So if they can't store, you know, X amount of bushels that they have at an expected or at their average production, those are the first bushels we have to sell. So we know that, you know, there's certain needs that you have in a marketing plan and before you even start to move on to the wants, you know, the 450 corn or something like that. So we figure out the space needs at harvest time. Then we take a look and figure out what the cash flow needs are for a guy. Does he have X amount of bills due December 1st? You know, at that point, then he needs to convert so many bushels into cash October, November timeframe in order to get those bills paid. You know, and then we start to pay attention to what we've got out of the bin and do the same thing. What are the cash flow needs for grain moved out of the bin? Does he have bills due January 15th, February 28th? You know, something of that nature. And those are our the non-negotiables is what I call them. You know what I mean? They're your solid number. You can't make more space. So they need to go to town. Bushels need to go to town at harvest time, and you can't, you can. I have a lot of guys that won't pay bills for a couple weeks and see if the market goes higher. I do not recommend that, of course, but that's like taking your mortgage payment to the casino, but I guess some farmers don't see it that way. But, you have to work on the non-negotiables. And we just basically build, what we anticipate the market to do, and we put target orders in place. For instance, for me right now, our guys are going to scale sell between 390 December futures up to about 440, 450, get to where we're 40 to 50% marketed on expected production for those that have bins, and then we're going to see where the market heads from there. And all of that, of course, will depend on how quickly we blow through these target orders. If the market starts to rally 20 cents a day because we have a weather issue, then we'll readdress and perhaps widen our spread. In corn right now, we sell every 10 to 15 cent increment, get started at 5% at the lower level all the way up to a larger percentage of the price rallies. And the same is for beans, is we lay out what we expect. Unfortunately, I'm bearish beans right now. So a lot of my guys, we were very heavy sellers around 1035, between 1025 and 1035 November futures that we saw here a couple, 3 weeks ago. And so most of my farmers or my customers right now that I work with on soybeans actually have the bulk of their new crop sales in place, and we're waiting to see how the production season develops. But that's how you build your marketing plan. You got to figure out your non-negotiables. It's just like building a household budget. You take your bills out first, the things that you can't avoid, your mortgage payment. Excuse me, mortgage payment, light bill, things like that. And then you factor in the littler things as you work towards the end, going out on Friday night, which restaurants can afford and stuff like that. And so that's kind of what we do, is take your household budget that you would build and turn it into an operational or farm budget.
So you're already selling next December corn, so you don't screw around in the middle. You just go right to December. Is that?
Well, I've got guys that we have old crop bushels. So we will market old crop bushels as we move forward. But yeah, we are just selling, if we're hedging, we are just selling December, hedging on the December board, because the new crop market or the new crop, their ability to deliver won't happen until, at the earliest, the very, very end of September into October. So that'll trade off the December board either way. In the past, we have had some people recommend that you hedge, new crop bushels in the July and wait for the spread to grow and everything will be okay. Well, intercrop year spreads are an easy way to stick your neck out and get your head chopped off. If you look back in time, 1996 is what a lot of folks in the industry refer to as the hedge to arrive debacle, which is a hedge to arrive is a hedge. You short the market for a farmer. He's selling and going to deliver grain to you at that set price. Well, that year, a lot of elevators, or one particularly large elevator, went out and pushed guys hedging new crop bushels in the July board, because at that point in time, there was very little carry or it was even inverted. And so they went out and sold a bunch of $3 hedges, give or take. Well, we ran into some issues, and the market had rallied. So the prices that they'd hedged were already lower than where the market was at. Well, then the July-December inverted. And so to roll that, of course, out to new crop, you have to buy the old or buy the July and sell the December. Well, and to do that, they'd lost nearly $1.50. So they already had a cheap contract in place, and then they had to roll into the inversion. And you had farmers that went from, they would have been able to hedge December corn at $3 had they just hedged in the proper month that they needed to hedge in, that were delivering $1.50 corn once the spread had been factored in and everything like that. So for most guys, unless you have old crop bushels to deliver on in case the market does invert, you want to just hedge where you expect to deliver, which would be starting in the December. And I like the December because right now the D March spread, D17 March 18 is only 9 cents. And typically from a full carry standpoint, you'll see that get out to 11, 12, even 13 cents. And a farmer can gain a couple extra cents by waiting on that spread.
All right. So, you know, so we've got all these things coming in the year of Angie, and I'm also bearish beans. And, you know, we had on Wednesday, we had that, you know, that pop back above 10. I think I look and I say probably 10-20 would be another spot to probably be a seller here. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's actually where our next set of targets are in for the guys that didn't, that either didn't take advantage of it the first time it came around, or did and want to do more. So we're waiting around that 10-20, 10-25 range, and we will have some more sellers at that point.
Right, and what's go ahead, I'm sorry.
It makes sense to me. It makes sense to me to take advantage. Guys are making money at that.
I understand. It's a good thing. So what's your view on the livestock markets here? What's your, we got a couple minutes left. What's your quick view?
Yeah, I think it's much the same. I mean, I think we have significant supply. I think we're going to continue to see significant supply. You know, it wasn't just 3 months ago. We were talking about the hog prices needing to go to basically zero, which is amazing to me. You know, everyone told me all year long how, you know, not to be bullish on hogs because they had to go down and discourage expansion. And next thing you know, we have a significant rally here. You know, I think the bulk of the meat prices rallying has come from excitement or anticipation of inflation. Of course, if the world or the populace is making more money, everyone assumes they're going to spend more money on food, you know, protein sources to be exact, which is your delicious bacon and in some cases your steak wrapped in bacon and, you know, all that good stuff. So I think that's why you've seen the market get a pop here as of late. There are some underlying demand factors that are decent. Slaughter numbers have been good. Cash numbers in the live cattle side of things and the cash sales has been good. You know, I question if the cash market itself isn't a bit higher just because of the holiday disruption and the poor weather. There is some talk that the northern weather, the extreme weather that we've been seeing in parts of the Dakotas with, you know, record snowfall and things like that could hurt the cattle herd up that way. You know, the cold temperatures and the drier conditions in the southern plains. You've got a lot of cattle grazing on wheat now and things like that because there's it's just not been a good start to the winter. So there are some underlying factors that could support the market, but, you know, I'm a proponent for most guys of selling decent rallies, especially when you looked at the hogs and saw that they were trading, you know, back up to levels we hadn't seen since last summer. The same for cattle. I'm a proponent of a guy hedging if he's got...
Hedge him out with... I got to cut you short now, kiddo. Hedge him out with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, vice president of grains, at Citizens Deliver. Angie, always thank you so much. Pleasure to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.